Good evening. Welcome to Globe and Crown Radio. This is Joey. In this Halloween-themed episode, Nate is going to read a story that is in the Globe and Crown published book called Memento Mori. You can find this book by going to globeandcrown.com, or if you go to Amazon or Smashwords, you can search for Memento Mori in either Joseph R. Halbert or Nathan Killian. This is Nate reading a story. It's very creepy. Every time my wife sees Nate now, she gives him side eye and remembers that he wrote this creepy story. We hope you have a happy Halloween.
There is a house, a story by Nathan Killian. There is a house. Well, I suppose out here among the piney wood roads of East Texas, there is always a house. Might make a good deal more sense if I were to be a bit more specific, like. This is one of those houses that your parents always warned you against, not in that right-out explicit sort of manner, but by taking the long way on the road back from church. Neighbor kids might have made a dare or two to ding-dong ditch, but even the bravest knew somewhere deep back in their mind that doing so was to take your life in your hands, no matter how ridiculous that might seem in the clear light of day. There is a house. Sometimes it's up on a hill or back in some woods. Sometimes it's at the end of that last lonely street in the older part of town. This is one of them sorts. A tottering, decrepit old ruin that somehow the city council hadn't seen fit to condemn. Heck, maybe they were avoiding it for the same reasons all sane-minded folk around here do. Fear that if you called too much attention to it, you might draw a good deal of unwanted attention on yourself. Attention that wasn't from around these parts, if you take my meaning. Anyhow, this here is a story of how I found myself venturing into that house that everyone in their right mind avoids. Might be that you've ended up in a similar position way back in your younger days, or know someone who has. Some of them probably ended up all right in the end. Probably even most of them. I wish this were that kind of story. I wish it like heck. It was a bright fall day 20 years or more ago. No, that's the way some old-timer telling about his glory days might say it, but it ain't how this story starts. This fall day was bright and clear, that's true enough by all accounts, but the date? That part I don't think I'll ever forget. It was October 29th of 1973. The time I'm less sure of. Both when this whole thing began and when it ended. Not, just so you understand, that it has ever really ended for me. Anyway, the time don't matter near so much, but that date... That date is darn sure important. I was a kid back then, most of a kid at least, and being such, I engaged in those myriad activities in which small-town youths enjoy participating to pass the time. Mostly this was fishing, something I myself personally preferred. Sometimes it was driving when someone had access to their parents' car and we could put together enough pocket money to pay for gas. Every so often, once in a blue moon, you might say, one of us would manage to rustle up a six-pack of beer, and boy did that feel fine. But on October the 29th, a Monday or so I recall, Bill Jones and I decided to walk our way back from school rather than ride with Dick Tillman and his brother Ross. Bill lived up the street from me a piece, and we'd been friends as far back as the second grade. He and Dick had argued earlier that afternoon about whether Janet Cross or Beverly Ann Seed was going to make homecoming queen, with the implication being that one or the other of them might have a chance to congratulate the winner in a romantic sort of fashion. Such relational drama was not something I cared to take much part in myself, but when Bill had pushed me to back Beverly Ann, I did what we always had, and I backed his play. Needless to say, that didn't sit well with Dick, and so we found ourselves, Bill and I, walking down the blacktop road with the Texas sun beating on our backs and only the first stirrings of a fall breeze rustling through the pines to either side. We walked in silence for the first piece, Bill still simmering in that way he had and me just alone with my thoughts as the pavement passed by. "Darn that Dick Tillman," Bill said. "Huh?" I replied, seeing as his sudden speech had knocked me out of my daydreaming. I said, "Darn that Dick Tillman. He knows Janet don't have a chance against Beverly Ann." "Oh, I'm sure he knows, Bill. Just afraid to let you know that your gal's sweeter than his, I suppose." "Well, he should know. Beverly Ann is twice as pretty, that long brown hair of hers, and a sweater so tight you can see every curve of those." "I know, Bill. I know. You know. Everyone at our lunch table has been made aware. I'm not too sure you won't call the paper and see if you can't pay for an advertisement just so the greater folk in Nacogdoches, Texas, don't get a chance to know, too. We're already walking because everyone knows, and it's hot out besides. Ain't it enough to you that I'm sweating here, knowing Beverly Ann is the best gal in all East Texas? You're right. Sorry that we're having to walk. It's just that darn Dick Tillman. I know. We walked a good piece more after that conversation, right on through the 2 miles between the high school and the front of our neighborhood. It wouldn't have been another 10 minutes when we'd have sat right down in Bill's living room. His mama would have set us on with a glass of sweet tea, seeing how hot we were. Maybe allowed us a slice of that pumpkin pie she'd made for the fall festival at church the afternoon before. Only Bill spoke up again as we turned onto his street, and well, Halloween is just around the corner, you know. Ross ain't allowed out no more because of one of the costumes he saw last year gave him nightmares for weeks. Heh, I remember. Boy about pissed his drawers when Clyde Douglas came swinging out of that street with a zombie mask on and fake blood running down his shirt. Ha! We heard him screaming 3 blocks away and thought someone had been killed. Had we not seen Clyde and his boys laughing, we might still have. They were close enough to that old house up Austin Drive, you know. Bill about wet his drawers, thinking about old Clyde. Might have had the thought of that house not sobered him up a bit. No need for us to hunt down some haunted house come Halloween, seeing as we've already got one right here, I said. Is it really, do you think? Haunted? Nah, spooky, that's for sure, but I don't know that there is such a thing as haunted. Me neither. I don't think I'll ever forget how quick he agreed. Like it was that he wanted to convince himself as much as he was convincing me that he wasn't scared of that place. But he was right to be scared, and right to want to stay away. Haunted may or may not be, but spooky wasn't near enough. Not near enough for miles. I don't know what it was exactly as convinced us we should turn our path up Austin Drive toward that old house. Nevertheless, turn up that way we did, almost as if, and believe me, I know how ridiculous this sounds, that the attention we had just given it were enough for it to sense us and call us there. We saw it standing there at the far end of the drive, that rusted through carport and lean-to garage standing, best as they could anyhow, next to a run-to-rot farmhouse with more faded yellow paint, wore out siding than the brick-and-mortar homes seen back towards the street where Bill and I lived. The driveway was pea gravel, heaped up with weeds as tall as a man's waist, and where it had normally been devoid of a single sign of occupancy, was now beset with a sagging old Ford Fairlane painted that same faded yellow as the house. "Someone's here," Bill said, and I remember the quaver in his voice as he said it. "Seems like," I replied, doing the best I could to keep that same quaver from reaching mine. "How do you think they found a car same color as the house?" "Now why the heck are you worried more about the color when there ain't never even been anything there before at all? Heck, there ain't been anybody living in that house since before my daddy moved here." "God, I was just wondering. I mean, have you ever seen such a thing?" "No, and I don't want to be seeing it now neither. Why did we come this way?" "Ain't nobody seen anyone come or go from this house in all them years, and now we see someone and you want to go?" "Warning's only half of it, Bill. I need to, and you do too." I remember being interrupted by a sound I can't rightly describe. The closest thing my mind can attach to it is a door squealing against a rusted hinge, and in defense of my sanity, I will say that that appeared to be what was causing the sound as the front door swung wide on that faded yellow house. But it weren't no rusted hinges would scream like that door did. Sent a chill right through my spine and rooted my feet right there to the ground as though I was planted on the spot. A woman, weather-beaten as though she'd been outside since the day she was born, stepped into the doorway, her gaze wandering up and down the street before settling on Bill and myself. She reached over to the door frame as though to steady herself, though for or from what, I don't rightly know. There was a brief moment when all the other sounds around us seemed to disappear, and when she spoke out in a hollow, echoey voice that seemed to be coming from somewhere far farther than the short distance that separated her front porch from our place on the street. "You boys live in the neighborhood?" she asked. Yes, ma'am," Bill replied. "Southern mummers, you understand, run deep in small towns like ours. And a young man knows to answer his elders with politeness or risk a tanned hide even when the situation is strange. I've been looking for some good strong boys like yourself, the old woman replied. Been searching high and low and haven't found the first pair who are willing to help an old woman. What's this world coming to, you hear? Ma'am, we best be getting home, I began, before Bill spoke over me. Might be we could offer a bit of help, seeing as you need it, no. What are you doing, Bill? I whispered harshly, wondering why on God's green earth he was offering to help this strange woman. Ain't nobody else ever been inside, Bill answered. Not Clyde Douglas, not you or me, and darn sure not Dick Tillman. You want to go inside that spooky old house to prove why you're a big spit over Dick Tillman? No, sir. It's just an old woman. She ain't going to be able to do nothing to the two of us anyhow. Come on. He said as he took the first steps towards the driveway and turned his attention back to the shade that stood in the doorway. What is it we can help you with, ma'am? My friend and I'd be glad to. Oh, bless you both, she replied. Bless your dear little hearts. Just come inside a minute and I'll show you what it is I need doing. I followed behind. Lord help me, but I followed behind Bill as we crossed the curb and stepped onto the driveway, the warm autumn air growing noticeably cooler as we stepped into the shadow cast by the house, and what sounds as belonged to the world around us returned, though as from a distance. The porch steps creaked with rotten timber as we stepped up to the doorway, the old woman backing up to beckon us into her home. Inside, the air was thick and hazy, the suffocating damp air of deep summer where the humidity is so dense you can see the moisture in the air like a fog. Molding wallpaper hung in decaying ribbons from the walls while old gas lanterns flickered amongst the cobwebs. I remember wanting to turn and run after stepping foot into that house, wanting to grab up Bill and head for the door and down the street and never look back. But now that we were in, such thoughts seemed feeble. I might want to run, but if I turned, the door would be locked or barred or gone altogether. And Bill, he was determined to see this through, so getting him to come along would not happen in an instant. He was right that this was just an old woman, and she shouldn't cause us any trouble, but he was wrong, too. I couldn't tell you why, but I knew that he was. She led us through the entry and past a solemn sitting room, stuffing poured from a threadbare sofa and a rocking chair sat beside a fireplace cold, filled with ash. The chair seemed to rock slightly as we walked by, far farther forward and back than any wind stirred by our passage might have warranted. We moved on past a dining room set with dusty china, and finally into a cramped kitchen with a small, square wooden table where sat the largest man I'd ever seen in my life. "Evelyn, I see you've brought us guests," said the man with a voice like rolling thunder tinged with a strong East Texas drawl. "It has been far too long since we've had company." "These boys come to help," she replied in that thin voice she'd called to us with from the doorway. "Gonna need a good look at 'em," the man said. "You, boy, come here close where I can lay eyes on you." Bill turned to look at me. Tried to, at least, but the man had an air that demanded your attention. He took a tentative step forward, and then another until he stood right there beside him. It was then I could tell how grotesquely huge the man was. Bill was not a short boy, and here he was next to a man sitting in a chair, and yet he still looked him in the eye without need to look down. The man gave Bill a long look up and down before settling back in his chair. "These pair ought to do, Ev. Ought to do just right." "I thought they might, soon as they seen 'em. Won't little Charlie be so happy?" "Charlie?" I said, confused. "Oh, yes, our little Charlie has been looking for some good, strong friends. For ages and ages he has." "Ma'am, I thought you needed us to help you with something, lifting or cutting the grass or something." "Oh, nothing like that. Our Charles keeps the grass just as neat as a pin, can't you see?" "There, right there outside their kitchen window was the neatest yard you ever seen. I could see it right back to the street, Austin Drive, but no longer blacktop like it'd been. Instead, a hard-packed red dirt road ran right along the front of the house, which was just as bright a yellow as you could ever picture." "What is this?" Bill said, that quaver he'd been fighting turning into full-on sobs. "I want to go home," I whimpered, unmanned by the side of that pristine yard. "Why, you are home, darlings. Home here with you, Charlie." The old woman smiled a toothless smile that seemed to erase her chin, and, "Please, sir, if you'd only let me leave. I've done everything you've said. I've done every last thing that you asked of me. I just want to go home, is all." Across the dining table, still set with dusty-covered china, a child sat cradling the desiccated body of Bill Jones. The boy looked up from the hollowed-out eyes of my old friend and fixed me with a scowl. "You interrupted my story, David. Now start over from the beginning, or I will be cross." I wept. Tears poured down my face and seemed they would never stop. "David?" Charlie's voice was a whisper filled with horrible promise. "There is a house."